This is a podcast from the Australian Securities Exchange and is part of the ASX range of services to keep you updated with issues related to investing on ASX markets. The information provided by ASX is for educational purposes only and is not intended to include or constitute financial product advice. You should obtain independent advice from an Australian Financial Services licensee before making any investment decisions. For more information on podcasts, stockbroker contact details, and other services, please visit www.asx.com.au.
Well, nice to see you all again. How are you? Very good. A couple of quick administrative matters that I'd like to deal with. The first one is my own disclaimer. I will mention some stocks to you today, and if I do mention some stocks, it's not a signal for you to go out and buy them. I'll talk about some good companies, and I will disclose if I own shares in those companies, but just because I own shares in those companies doesn't mean that they're necessarily right for you. I don't know your financial circumstances. I don't know if it's appropriate. I will also talk about companies that I, short of a better word, detest. They might be companies that other investors and other fund managers and brokers might call blue chip. And they may be shares that you have in your portfolio. Hands up if you own Telstra. Right. Okay. So I might mention some companies. I'm not saying Telstra is one I detest, but I might mention some companies today that I don't like. It's not a signal for you to go out and sell them. But that's the subject of today's talk, when to sell. There's a lot of discussion about what to buy and when to buy and how to buy. There's not a lot of talk about when to sell. Here's a statement that many of you have probably seen before. You've never made money in the stock market until you sell. Okay, is that true? Yes or no? Is it true? So what if you've got a stock that you bought? Let's say you bought Leighton's at $60 prior to the GFC. And it's now trading. Does anyone know what Leighton's is trading at right now? $21. I'm sorry about that. Obviously you own some. Yes. Hands up if you own Leighton's. Okay, very good. Not very good. So you bought them at $60. You haven't made any money because you haven't sold it. Have you lost any money because you haven't sold it? Yes or no? What if it's permanently lost? What if it'll never go to $60 again? What if it never goes to $40, which is the post-GFC high? I'd say you have lost money. In fact, I'm so certain that whether you realise the losses or not, you've lost money. I'm so certain of that I actually think this is more true, or truer. And it is that you make all your money when you buy. Only if you buy correctly does the selling make any sense. And the five strategies that I'm going to show you for today, or the five rules for selling, only then does it make sense. Because if you've bought something at the wrong price, then whether you've sold it or not, you're going to lose money. And that's just a harsh reality. Okay. So, some of you believe that by holding on to shares for a long time, they'll come good. Again, not true. There's a terrific quote, I think it's Warren Buffett. He said, "Time is the friend of the extraordinary or the wonderful business, but the enemy of the poor business." The longer you hold on to companies that are bad companies or shares in those companies, the longer you hold on to them, the greater is your loss, because there's an opportunity cost. Even if the share price drops from a dollar to 10 cents and it stays at 10 cents for 10 years, every year that you don't sell, you're losing money. Because you could have redeployed that capital elsewhere and generated a much higher return, or even a slightly higher return. So there is an opportunity cost. So if you buy bad businesses, particularly businesses, and we'll talk about this later on, whose shares are trading at well above their intrinsic value. Example, it could even be a good business. Let's take Woolies. Does anyone remember whether or not they bought Woolies in 2007 and haven't made any money yet? Is anyone in that position? They bought Woolies a few years ago, 2007, 2008, haven't made any money yet. Anyone? No? One person up the back? Hands up if you're not going to put your hand up no matter what I ask today. Very good. Thank you very much for being honest. Appreciate that, gents. Okay, so it could be a good company that you've bought well above intrinsic value. That green line represents intrinsic value on the slide, and the share price eventually will fall towards intrinsic value. So it could be that you've bought a good company. It could be that you've bought a bad company that makes no money and has got no prospect of making any money. Its intrinsic value is actually zero. But you've bought it, it's fallen in price, you're going to hang on. And you know a classic scenario is to buy shares at a certain price, and when they drop, you buy a little bit more because, hey, it's even better value than when I first bought. And then when they drop a bit more, you're not so convinced, so you don't buy as much. And what you might do is you might say, look, if it goes back up to the price that I paid for them, I'll get out. And then they go down again. And then what you do is you say, well, if they go back up to the price where I was going to originally get out, but I was waiting for them to go back what I paid, if they go back to there, I'll get out, and then they go all the way down, then you just put them in the bottom drawer, and they become a long-term investment, don't they? Okay. So if that's typical of you, then these five rules that I've got for you today are going to clean all that up. Okay. There's no point in having rules if you break them. So the rules that I've got for you today are something that you can actually build an investment strategy around. Over long periods of time, price tends to follow intrinsic value. So it's very important. It's very important that you understand what the value of a business is. I believe firmly that if you don't know what the value of a company's shares are, what the company is really worth, if you don't know that, then you have no idea about when to sell. There's no goalpost. There's no rock in the tempest. There's no lighthouse in the ocean. There's nothing for you to anchor yourself to. Price is going up and down, and your sentiment will just swing with price. You'll be jubilant when the price goes up. You'll be dismayed and disappointed when the price goes down. But you have no idea where that price is in relation to what the business is worth. So again, despite the fact that I'm giving you five rules to sell, really they're only applicable if you are thinking about what the shares or the business that you own shares in is fundamentally worth, its intrinsic value. Okay. Benjamin Graham said, in the short run, the stock market is a voting machine. It's a popularity contest. And he said this about the voters. He said, there's a voter registration test. And the test doesn't require you to be intelligent or emotionally stable. It just requires you to have money. So in the short run, what Benjamin Graham is saying is that prices move around. They move up and down. They move up and down based on people buying and selling, and those people are neither emotionally stable nor intelligent. But he said this, in the long run, the market isn't a voting machine. The market is a weighing machine. In the long run, prices tend to follow intrinsic value. Classic example, Telstra. For the last 10 years, Telstra's profit hasn't changed. There's been no increase in profit for Telstra, despite the increase in mobile phone use, despite the increase in pay TV subscriptions, despite the increase and penetration of the internet in homes in Australia. Telstra's profit today is about the same or a bit less than what it was 10 years ago. Telstra's intrinsic value is about between $2.50 and $3. You can all write that down, I don't mind. How many of you own Telstra? Again, just shove hands. Keep your hands up and have a look around. Okay, very good. By the way, there's a big surprise coming in this presentation today. This is very different to the presentations I've given before. I will ask you to stand up and participate in a game today. All right? So participation's required today. So Telstra's share price 10 years ago, what was it? 2001, $7? $7 or $8 or thereabouts? 2001, after the internet bubble burst, I think it was about $7. But the intrinsic value was the same as what it is today, $2.50 to $3. So Benjamin Graham was right. In the long run, price follows value. In the long run, the market is a weighing machine. The prices eventually come down to Telstra's intrinsic value. Okay. The other reason you might not sell a share is because they've been labelled blue chip. Hands up if you own Amcor shares. Okay, a couple of you. Hands up if you own Amcor shares and you just are embarrassed to admit it. Very good. Thank you very much. Two. Okay. So Amcor is described as a blue chip company. In my book, I believe that blue chip companies are those whose intrinsic value rises at a steady clip, at a good clip. So I want a business whose intrinsic value, if Benjamin Graham is right, and if price follows intrinsic value, then I want a business whose intrinsic value is going up over the years. And if it can go up at 10 or 15 or 20% a year, that's perfect. In fact, in our funds management business, at Montgomery Investment Management, we have something called 2020 Vision. So we're looking for companies, ideally, our biggest positions will be in companies that are trading at a 20% discount to intrinsic value. So they're trading at a big discount to the value, and their intrinsic value is likely to rise, or we expect it to rise, by 20% a year going forward. So if a business that's a true blue chip business, Amcor has been described as blue chip. Something's wrong with the definition of blue chip. The opportunity cost of owning Amcor has been very, very high over the years because its intrinsic value hasn't changed, and the price, as Benjamin Graham said, is likely to follow intrinsic value. The market is a weighing machine. And so by not selling Amcor, for whatever reason, because somebody told you it was blue chip or you hope that it will recover or whatever it is, that's been an expensive exercise. So it's not a rule for selling, but what we need to do is we need to rethink the definition of what blue chip means to us. Qantas has been described in the past as a blue chip company. Who would regard Qantas as blue chip today? Hands up. No one's putting their hand up. Okay. Who would describe Telstra as blue chip? Anyone? A couple of you? Hope springs eternal. Okay, so maybe Telstra's blue chip. The classic definition of blue chip, or what I think when I speak to brokers and I ask them what they mean by blue chip, big company, been around a long time, steady dividends, dominates its market. That's, pretty much it. No reference to profitability, no reference to bright prospects, no reference to increasing intrinsic value. All the things that are important to making money in the stock market, not referenced in the definition of blue chip. Okay, so there's a whole bunch of reasons. Hands up if you use a full service broker. Anyone? Yep, okay, I don't need to know who they are. I'm not going to ask you their names or anything like that. So use a full service broker. Hands up if you call the broker. Right, okay, keep your hands up and put your hands up if the broker always calls you. Okay, broker calls you. So I'm going to take someone from the audience, someone up close. Who uses a full service broker and the broker calls them? Hands up down here. Anyone down here? No? Anyone a bit nervous? Yep. So what does when the broker calls you, what does he say to you or she?
This could be worthwhile.
Okay. I'll repeat it so you understand what was said. This could be worthwhile. It sounds like a compelling reason to buy, doesn't it? Anyone else got another one? Anyone else want to share one? No? When their broker calls them? Yeah.
He tells me when to sell if he thinks there's likely to be a downturn.
Okay, so he'll ring you and he'll tell you when to sell if he thinks there's a downturn. We'll take one more. Any others? No? We get brokers calling us all the time. They call us pretty much every day. We ask them not to. Some of them listen and some of them don't. We'll say to some of them, look, we just want your research, we just want all the data, and we'll call you when we find something that's of interest. Nevertheless, they still call, they still ring up and they say, look, we've got a line of XYZ stock, there's 100,000 to sell, are you interested? No, I don't remember calling you and asking you to tell me that. Okay. So they'll call for a whole host of reasons, but remember this. There's a Melbourne broker. They'll call you to get you to do what? Do something. Trade. Do something. Why in the world would they be compelled to do that? Because they're being paid based on you doing that. Now, if I go into a hairdresser's and I ask the hairdresser whether I need a haircut, what are they going to say? Of course. Warren Buffett has that great quote, never ask the barber whether you need a haircut. Right? So we're not going to relying on external advisors to tell us when to sell. We want their information. We definitely want the information. If they know something's transpiring at a company, if they know there's an announcement, we want all that. That's what we want. But we don't necessarily want them to tell us what to do with that information. We need to make those decisions ourselves. Otherwise, we don't have a strategy. We're relying on someone else. Okay. I think there's five reasons to sell, and I want to go through those reasons with you today, and I'm going to describe them in detail. So, first reason for selling, your portfolio or some of the stocks in your portfolio are junk. Hands up if you think you've got some junk in your portfolio. Okay, great. I should just start a business being a garbo and cleaning up all your junk. There's clearly an opportunity. I never thought I'd see so many hands. If you know there's junk in your portfolio, why aren't you doing anything about that? Pam, put your hands up again if you've got some junk in the portfolio. Okay. All right. Sir, you. Super optimist. Okay, very good. Why do you... Waiting for the rebound. Any other... Yep.
Waiting to recover my losses.
Waiting to recover your losses. I've got rid of a lot of it, but I might be wrong. Yeah? How do you find living with him? You know, so, do you get decisions ever? Okay, so another one, one more. Anyone else? Yep? You wait for the AGM. Oh, you want the biscuits and the milk. Yeah, okay, I understand that. All right, so there are legitimate reasons for hanging on as well. But most of those reasons were not reasons at all. They were excuses. They weren't reasons at all. There doesn't appear to be a strategy there. There doesn't appear to be a reason for selling. So one of the reasons to sell is if you own some junk, some stocks that are going to cost you money. Hoping that the shares bounce is no different to betting on red or black at the roulette wheel. That's not a strategy for investing. Second reason, shares are expensive. They're expensive. They've gone above their intrinsic value. We'll talk about that in some detail. The next reason, intrinsic value of the business is actually declining. So for every single listed company, we've got a service coming up, and we talk about it on the blog, and I don't know if you've heard about it. We call it our A1 service because we're not telling you what the name of it is. But basically what we've got is we've got the intrinsic values for every single listed Australian company going back 10 years, going forward 3 years, every single company updated daily, and that helps us work out which are the companies whose intrinsic values are rising and whose intrinsic values are falling. If Benjamin Graham was right, and over the long run, prices follow value, then if value is falling, if the intrinsic value of a company is declining, then the share price ultimately will do the same thing. Now, we don't know when, we don't know how long it's going to take, but ultimately it happens. Okay. Next reason, you've found something better and you don't have any cash. So the fourth reason is there's another opportunity that has better metrics. It's going to offer you a higher internal rate of return. It's a better quality business, for example, or it's showing better value. And so you sell something to replace it with this thing. And the fifth reason, you have to read chapter 13 of Valuable. And there's 30 copies outside. Okay. All right, so... first reason, you've got junk in your portfolio. The definition of blue chip I gave you earlier. This is a blue chip cookie. Now, chocolate chips melt. Over long periods of time, the performance of your portfolio will do likewise if it's full of what has traditionally been described as blue chip but isn't. What are the things we're looking for in a truly blue chip company? And it's this. You want high rate of return on equity. You can write that down. You want little or no debt. A company with little or no debt. You want a company with bright prospects. So they're going to sell more widgets, or they're going to be able to sell they're going to be able to sell the same amount of widgets at a higher price. The very best business, bar none, the very best business without exception is a business where the only decision management has to make every year is this: I wonder how much I should increase the price of my product by this year. That's the only decision they need to make. Warren Buffett talks about a company that he owns shares in called See's Candy. It's in the United States. Has anyone been to the US and bought See's Candy? Yep, candy. They call them candies. We would call them, chocolate. I guess just chocolates. You know, chocolates with soft centres. They're candies over there. And Warren Buffett says every year he does. He says this: "Mirror, mirror on the wall, how much should I charge for candy this fall?" And that's the only decision he needs to make. Now, See's Candy over the last 40 years or thereabouts has doubled or tripled the volume of chocolates that they actually sell, but the revenue has gone up exponentially because the price just keeps going up. So the millions of pounds that they sell, or the hundreds of thousands of pounds that they sell of chocolate, I think it's millions, hasn't increased as much as the revenue has increased because they're raising the price. And that's a wonderful business. Okay, here's a portfolio of businesses that are typically described as blue chip. So you can see them there on the slide. Some of you will own shares in these companies. BHP, hands up if you own BHP. I think it's down 3% today. That's good, isn't it? Welcome to the stock market. Rio Tinto, Commonwealth Bank, Westpac, ANZ, National Australia Bank, News Corp, Telstra, Woodside, Wesfarmers, all blue chips. But notice the next column. Notice the next column. Again, this is from this A1 service that I mentioned earlier. Every single company in Australia is ranked. It's given a credit score, if you like. You know how Standard & Poor's and Moody's give AAA and AA- and so on? Every single company. A true blue chip is an A1 or an A2. Maybe a B1. They're blue chips. Everything else is something slightly less than blue chip. The worst ranking you can get, if you're a listed Australian company using our approach, is a C5. And there are plenty of C5s out there, and I suspect if I looked at your portfolios, I would find some. They're the worst possible ratings. Okay, and in fact, we can see a C4 there. Westfield. Westfield's a C4. Okay, for me, that's not investment grade. Now, you might want to buy Westfield and the shares might go up, but I don't own it in my portfolio and I wouldn't buy it for my investors, simply because it isn't blue chip, the way I look at blue chip. Okay. Here is a share price. This is the share price performance of a company you would be familiar with. Has anyone heard of Qantas? Yes? No? Anyone not? Don't know what they do? Okay. The horizontal line that you can see there is the intrinsic value of Qantas going back 10 years. And where it turns orange over on the right-hand side, that's the forecasts for the next 3 years, although I've chopped it off short on the right-hand side. What do you notice about that line when you stand back and you look at it over 10 years? What do you notice? It's gone down over 10 years, or it hasn't changed very much in 10 years. That's not a blue-chip company. Have a look at the share price over 10 years. It's lower today than it was a decade ago. Now, people described, investors, professional and part-time investors alike, described over the last 10 years Qantas as a blue-chip business, a blue-chip company, a blue-chip portfolio inclusion. I would say that that return, the fact that the share price today is lower than it was 10 years ago, that return is anything but blue-chip. We're interested in blue-chip returns, not the traditional descriptor. Okay, so we want to buy businesses whose intrinsic value is going up. We don't want any junk in our portfolio. These guys here, they can recognise junk. Based on the number of hands that went up in the audience amongst you earlier, they're better at recognising junk than you are. It's awful to think, hang on a sec, I've always had a strategy, I've always had a plan, I've always been disciplined, and yet I've got these stocks in my portfolio that I know are junk, and yet I'm doing nothing about it. I throw all my strategies and all my approaches out, and I just rely on hope that they'll recover. We need to take investing seriously and we need to approach it with a discipline. We need to be consistent, otherwise we won't know what's working and what's not. Okay, now this is an interesting contrast. This is a portfolio that an investor in our funds brought to us and asked us to just cast our eye over and see what we think. So this is not a professional investor, an investor who has spent the last 20 years investing or thereabouts. And what I did is I ranked all the companies by their quality rating, the quality score that we give every company. There are a lot of there's some A1s, some A2s, some A3s. There's a few A4s which aren't investment grade. B1, B2 is investment grade. B3 is the limit of investment grade. And then B4, C3, C4, C5, not investment grade. There's not much junk in this portfolio. This is an impressive looking portfolio. But what you'll notice is that some of the names aren't typical blue chip names. I don't mind if you own a small company. I don't mind if you own a company that's been flying under the radar of the analysts for 10 years. That doesn't matter. What matters is whether it's a good quality business. Contrast this portfolio with someone I know who is a stockbroker. They're a professional investor. They asked me to look at their portfolio as well. And they said, would you have a look over this portfolio? And this is one of their smaller portfolios, admittedly. But they said, would you have a look at this and tell me what you think? Now, this is a professional investor. Have a look at the quality scores over on the left-hand side for their portfolio. A3, A4, there's some B1s, they're investment grade. B2's investment grade, nothing else. There's three stocks in this portfolio. There's an A3, so there's four. There's four that are investment grade. And the rest of them aren't. The rest of them are junk. Isn't that interesting? This person happens to be advising the first person that I showed you. That's very interesting. There's a phrase, a plumber's pipes are always leaky. Yes? Does anyone, I know a friend who's an architect. He still hasn't renovated his house. No. Plumber's pipes are always leaking. Brokers' portfolios don't appear to look as good as the investors that they work for. Here's the breakdown of the portfolio. Remembering that B2 and B1 is investment grade and nothing else is. So you can see the proportion of the portfolio that's investment grade. The rest of it is junk. By the way, some of you like to speculate. I have no doubt that some of you don't mind. In Australia, we love it, don't we? We love a punt. We like to take a gamble. We like to take a risk. I'm not suggesting that you never do that again. But I'm suggesting you have a separate amount of money to do that with. And with the investment funds that you've got, you quarantine those and you apply a rigorous and disciplined strategy to it, including a strategy for selling. Okay. Step number one is to buy a good quality business. Turn the stock market off. How difficult is that to do? How difficult is it to do when you go out these doors today and you turn on your iPhone or you open up the newspaper and you find out what's going on in the stock market? But if we shut the doors and we didn't open them again and we provided you with all the food that you needed, there's no windows in here, so we gave you all the food that you needed, we gave you all the facilities that you needed to live, and I just kept handing out annual reports of companies that had no reference to the share price. And we just invested on the basis of the quality of the business and what we thought they were worth. I could almost guarantee that over a 10, 15 year, 20 year period, we will do better than doing what we're already doing, which is watching the stock market. Hands up if you own your own business and it's not listed on the stock market, or if you did in the past. Yep. Thank you. To work out those people who put their hands up, let me ask you this question. To work out whether or not the business was performing well, did you open up the Financial Review or the Age and look at the share tables to see how the stock was going? No, you couldn't because it wasn't listed. So what were the things you used to assess whether or not the business was going well? What did you look at? Some suggestions, please. The bank account? You wanted to know whether that was going up? Yep. What else? Cash flow. Okay, bank account, cash flow.
Debt.
Debt. Make sure there was none or that was going down. Yep, anyone else? Sales. Sales and profit. They're the things that we should be looking at. You're already qualified to analyse a business. They're the things that we should be looking for. Turn the stock market off. It's difficult to do when everybody else insists on having it turned on. It's a little bit like when you're trying to study or you're trying to read and the rest of the family have the television blaring or the radio going really loud. You can't concentrate. You're constantly being distracted. The stock market is no different to that. You're constantly being distracted by that noise when really all you should be doing is focusing on the business. I'm not suggesting a fish and chip shop is a great business, but I want you to focus on the business. Because if you don't, this is what will happen to your portfolio. And I don't think that was a happy ending. Okay. All right, and don't buy airlines. Okay. They make good photos, but that's about it. Okay. The second reason you might sell, that's the first reason that I wanted to talk about. You've got junk in your portfolio or your portfolio isn't good quality businesses only. The second reason is that the companies, maybe even the good quality ones, are very, very expensive. Now, does anyone know what car this is? No, it's not an Alfa. It's a Ferrari. Does anyone know which model it is? Any thoughts? It's a 250 GTO. Yep, or a GT. There's only, I think there's 12 of them in the world, and this particular one was sold for £30 million. That's an expensive car. Now, there's no way if you bought that car, you could convince your partner that it was a sensible decision. It was an impassioned decision. But let me say this. It's also important, and just this is just an aside, it's also important that we enjoy some of the rewards of our hard work. If we've been successful in the market, you know, the reality is we're not going to be here forever, so we should enjoy some of that. Now, a friend of mine who is a stockbroker shared a story with me, and I'd like to share it with you. He met two investors. He's a stockbroker. He met a husband and wife, and they were investors in the stock market, and they always felt very, very... the husband was always upset when his wife spent $200. They would scrimp and save and count every single dollar. And whenever she went to the supermarket and spent $200, he got very, very upset. And the reason he got upset was because they looked at the amount of money that they've got and they said, right, well, we, you know, and the amount of income that that money was generating, they said, well, this is our budget. Now, my friend, who's a stockbroker, sat down with them and looked at their financial circumstances, noted that they had $2 million in the bank and that they were 96. And suggested that maybe they don't buy this car, but maybe they do something nice for themselves. Okay, so bear that story in mind. If you've got good quality businesses, even the best quality businesses, they can get to ridiculous prices. They can get to prices that are well above intrinsic value, way above even intrinsic value in 2 or 3 years' time. And if that's the case, then it's one of my rules for selling. If you'd own Woolworths from 2003 or 2004 up to 2007, your returns would have been extraordinary. But in 2007, the shares were well above intrinsic value. Since 2007, Woolworths shares have gone sideways to slightly down. So you would have been better off selling and putting that money elsewhere. On a risk-adjusted basis, you'd probably be better off putting the money in the term deposit. Okay. I want to go through a scenario with you. And I want everybody to put down their paper and I want everyone to stand up. Go on. And do you know what? You know the funniest thing for me? It's seeing the grumps. It's seeing some of you do this, go, oh, I don't want to stand up. You know, why not? It's not that hard. It'll be over in a few minutes anyway. I want everyone to put their hands on their heads. Okay. We're going to track the price of bananas. Doesn't matter if they're bananas, doesn't matter what they are. Okay. When is the price too high? So we've got, keep your hands on your heads. You can't reach. No. Okay. Understand. No problem. Okay, so we've got $2.99 bananas on the left, and we've got the price currently, $12.99. The price is going to change now. I'm making up the price. What I want you to do is I want you to put your hands, keep your hands on your head if you think the next price is going to be higher or lower than $12. Okay, so if you think the price is going to go up, keep your hands on your heads. If the price is going to go down, put your hands down. Okay, right? So if you think the price is going up, keep your hands on your heads. If you think the price is going down, take your hands off. Okay, everyone who put their hands down, sit down. Okay, keep your hands up. If you think the price is going up, keep your hands on your heads. If you think the price is going down, put your hands by your side. Okay? Okay, sit down if you put your hands down. Again, same thing, hands on your head if you think it's going up, hands by your side if you think it's going down. Sit down. No cheating. I'm attuned to cheating. My son does it all the time. Okay, so hands on your heads if you think it's going up. Hands by your side if you think the next price is down. Hands down if you think down. Hands up if you think up. Again. Okay. There's a psychological element to this test, don't worry. Hands on your heads if you think up again. Hands down if you think down. Hands up if you think up. Hands down if you think down. Oh, everyone, there's only two people upstairs who've got their hands on their heads. Okay, hands up if you think up. Hands down if you think down. So if you had your hands on your heads, you have to sit down. Okay, who's left? Anyone? One person? Two people. All right, hands up on your heads if you think up, hands down if you think down. Okay, hands up or down? Down again? You're both out. Okay, I knew that when I went through this process, I would knock you all out before the end of it. What does that teach us? Teaches us not to gamble. Don't use price without any reference to value to determine whether to buy or sell. You will lose. We just proved it. Now, all I did there was something very, very simple. I knew that if I put the price up and I kept putting the price up for long enough, I'd knock most of you out. And then I knew that if I got to a point that was so high there was only a few left, they would think that it would continue going up, so I'll make it go down, and I knew that would trick them, and it did. And then some people thought that was the end and it was going to keep going down, and I tricked them again and made it go up. That happens in the stock market every day. Prices are going up and down all the time, and we spend far too much time looking at the price of everything. It's a waste of time. You are gambling. Don't do it. The only way you're going to know whether something is expensive or not, the only way you're going to know it is if you know what the thing is worth. You need to know the intrinsic value. And if it's truly expensive compared to intrinsic value out 2 or 3 years, then that is a reason to sell. Real life example. Here we've got a company from 2005 to 2007. Is it above or below its intrinsic value? What should we do? Sell? Let's see what happens next. Well, that was a smart decision. Now it's below intrinsic value. What should we do? Maybe, depending on what the company is and its prospects and whether it's good quality, maybe we should buy it. And so if you look at 2000, and sorry, I'll just go back a step there. So there's to 2007, there's to early part of 2009. And if you look on the next slide, 2009 is roughly in the middle of that chart, and you can see what's happened to the price again. But now it's expensive again. Unless you know what the intrinsic value of a company is, then you can't possibly know whether something is expensive or not. Only unless you've got a reference point. That's why I have the intrinsic values for every single listed Australian company, because I need to know what that reference point is. It's a question down here. The question is, define intrinsic value. The answer to that is, buy the book. Okay. In all seriousness, this we could do that. We could spend an hour just on intrinsic value, and in past sessions I've done that. But today's not about that. Today's about when to sell. So I've got to just focus on the topic. But we can talk about that perhaps later on. But it is a chapter in the book. Yeah.
You said earlier that when a price is reasonably higher than the intrinsic value, you should sell.
It's above the intrinsic value out a few years. Yes. Yeah. So if it's going to take 3 years for intrinsic value to catch up to the price, well, I would be selling. I'm not suggesting you do it, but you know, that's what they are my rules for selling. So the price could be above intrinsic value today, but if the intrinsic value is rising and it's still lower than intrinsic value next year and the year after, I'll hold on. Yep.
If you cross that line, the white one, is that a 3 year out intrinsic value?
That's the intrinsic value for that year. Yep. Okay. All right. Owning a portfolio of expensive stocks. Very high maintenance. Okay? Just like these people here. They just look it, don't they? Okay. Now, some of you are reluctant to sell because of the tax consequences. I find that increasingly less relevant. Why? Because as baby boomers retire, guess what? They don't pay any tax. You don't even need to move to the Bahamas. You don't need to go to Jersey anymore. You can just stay at home in Melbourne and pay no tax. But typically, what happens, those of us that do pay tax, and I'm delighted to say that I am paying my tax to support you, thank you very much. Those of us who do pay tax, the typical response to not selling is this. I bought at $10, the shares are now $20. At the highest marginal tax rate, if I sell, I've made a $10 profit, and therefore I'm going to pay $5 tax. So my after-tax return is equivalent to a $15 share price. I bought at 10, they're now 20. The shares have to go back to 15 for me to be at the same point. I don't think the shares are going to fall from $20 to $15, so therefore I'm not going to sell and pay the tax. Then, of course, what happens? The shares fall to $15. At $15, what does the taxpayer say? Well, I bought them at 10, they're now at 15. If I sell them here, I'll pay $2.50 tax. That's equivalent to $12.50 a share. I don't think they're going to fall to $12.50 because they were at 20, now they're at 15. They're not going to $12.50, so I'm not going to sell and pay the tax. And then what happens? Well, they go to $12.50, and now the investor, the taxpayer, says, well, I bought them at 10, they're at $12.50. They're not going to go, you know, I'm going to have to pay $1.25 in tax. They're not going to go to $11.25, and they won't do that, and so therefore I won't pay the tax. And what do? They go to $2. And then what do? We sell them because we've got a tax loss we can carry forward. Isn't that fantastic? What a great strategy. Would you invest in a forestry scheme that offered lousy returns but gave you a tax deduction? Would you do that? I'm not asking if you have. I'm asking you if you would. Yes? No, you wouldn't. So if you're not going to let your tax, you wouldn't let tax decisions drive a bad investment decision in that scenario, then you shouldn't allow tax to drive your decisions here. The decision to sell needs to be based on the price and the quality. Nothing else. Warren Buffett sold shares in PetroChina when they reached their intrinsic value. And he paid something like, I think he paid several billion dollars in tax or something. And he expressed, you know, the fact he was disenfranchised by how much tax he paid. But he noted positively, he said, look, the positive side of this is that I funded the defence budget and social welfare in the United States for 4 hours. In other words, pay the tax. Okay. The next reason for selling is declining intrinsic value. So the value of the business is actually declining. If that happens, if you can see that intrinsic value for a business is going to go down, and what are the things that might trigger that? Well, it could be that profits aren't growing as fast as equity, so return on equity is declining. It could be that profits themselves are declining. It could be that the company keeps issuing shares and diluting shareholders. That's going to have a negative impact on intrinsic value. So there's three reasons why intrinsic value might be going down. If you can see that happening in the future, then that could be a reason to sell the shares, particularly if the share price is well above the intrinsic value now. Here's an example of a company whose intrinsic value recently hasn't been going up. You can see over the last 10 years, or from 2002, the intrinsic value is roughly unchanged. The share price has done exactly as Benjamin Graham said it would. In the short run, the market is a voting machine, so you can see in the short run price goes up and down, because remember the voters are neither intelligent nor emotionally stable. But in the long run, the market is a weighing machine. In the long run, price follows intrinsic value. And intrinsic value, if it's not declining, if it's going sideways, and the price is well above, well, the price is eventually going to catch up to intrinsic value. Or I should say catch down to intrinsic value. And that's what's happened here. Now, many of you, if you don't know this company, you'll certainly have felt it in your portfolios. It's Telstra. Okay, so there's Telstra's intrinsic value going back a decade and going forward a few years. And you can see that presently it's close to its intrinsic value, but it's still not cheap. Okay, so we don't want to buy a business whose intrinsic value isn't changing or it's going down. Now, the worst combination in your portfolio is a company that has these two characteristics. Characteristic number one, it's expensive. Characteristic number two, it's poor quality. A company that is both expensive and poor quality is a recipe for potential disaster. It's certainly going to reduce the returns of your portfolio. There's no doubt about that. It is a very unattractive combination. The next reason is you've simply found something better. You've found a better investment elsewhere. And this is probably the most difficult sell decision to make. How do I go about, and the question that I'm often asked is, how do I go about deciding, if I was fully invested in the market, how do I decide which thing I'm going to sell? Well, think about what we've just been talking about. We've been talking about buying good quality businesses when they're cheap and selling the poor quality. So if a good business becomes poor, so its quality deteriorates, we sell. If the share price gets expensive, we sell. If the intrinsic value starts to decline, that's another possible reason to sell. But what we're effectively doing constantly and subconsciously is we're building a portfolio which in itself becomes a benchmark against which everything else is measured. We're building a portfolio of only good quality businesses that are good value and aren't too expensive. So if that's what we've got, if that's what our portfolio is, then everything else that we're considering buying has to be better than something we've already got. So the decision about which thing to sell in order to replace it with the thing that we've found that is better is made easier because of the process that we adopted to build that portfolio in the first place. So if we follow a strategy of just buying great quality businesses when they're cheap, then we don't have to worry too much about everything else, because if something is truly better than what we've already got, it's easy to make the decision to improve our portfolio. I put a little tag there, my other car's an Aston Martin. Do you remember those stickers that you used to have, you know, if you weren't real proud of your car? You know, so I grew up in West Brunswick here in Melbourne, and we weren't real proud of our car, and I think I bought some of those stickers for my mum when I was a kid. You know, my other car is a Ferrari, my other car is a Bentley, my other car. I think we had four or five other cars, but we only ever drove the Mazda station wagon. So if you find something better, you know it's better because you've got the metrics within the portfolio to measure it against. So selling something because something else is better is a valid reason, because you're improving the ultimate performance of the portfolio. Put together a portfolio of businesses whose earnings march upward over the years, buy those businesses at a reasonable price, And over time, the portfolio will generate very, very attractive returns, certainly in line with the performance of the businesses. Okay, what does an attractive business look like? Well, it has some of these characteristics. Extraordinary prospects, an attractive return on equity. That return on equity is driven by a competitive advantage which you've been able to identify. Low debt, strong cash flow. I talked about some of these things earlier. What we're going to do now is look at two businesses. We're going to ask this man which one we should buy. He looks like an honest bloke. He's not from Melbourne, you'll be delighted to know. He's a Sydney-sider. And I know that cheers, that delights you. And we're going to ask him which of these two businesses we should own. I want to show you some numbers for Amcor. Back in 2001, I want you to forget about the stock market again. Turn the stock market off. Take off your stock market hat, stock market glasses, and just imagine you were given the opportunity to own this business outright, on your own, the whole business, by yourself. Let's look at it. How much money did we put into that business? Well, we put in about $2.4 billion, $2.36 billion. That's how much equity we put in. And our first year after, and we also borrowed $2.5 billion. And after running the business for 1 year, we generate a profit of $245 million. Good or bad? What do you think? Good result? Bad result? Someone said bad? Who thinks bad? Okay. Who thinks good? Okay, I think it's reasonable. I don't think it's outstanding, but I don't think it's disastrous either. If you can get 12% on your equity, if you can get 12% after tax on your equity, that's a pretty good return. Yeah, remember that's net profit after tax. So that's not a bad result. There are, admittedly, businesses that generate return on equity much higher than that, and I'll show you that in just a minute. But let's decide to keep running this business for another 10 years because we're encouraged by that early performance. So, after 10 years, we're generating a profit of $480 million, which is a lot higher than it was 10 years ago. Is that good or bad? It's good. But how much extra money did you have to put in this business to generate that additional profit? You had to tip in another $1.7 billion. I wouldn't mind the profit growing from $245 million to $480 million if I didn't need to put another cent back in. But this is really not much better than a bank account. A higher return, but a bank account nevertheless. Because the only way I'm getting those higher profits is by putting more money back into the business. The best businesses, you don't have to keep putting money back into them. You can take those profits out and do something more profitable with it. Or more fun. Yep. Yeah, if you look at the... That's right, if you look at the gentleman up front saying if you look at the return on invested capital, you add the debt on and you have a look at the return on the total amount, well, that's a different return altogether. I like to look at return on equity and generally avoid companies that have a lot of debt. So I'm not interested in the return on invested capital as much as I am the return on equity. I want to know what the return is on the money I'm committing. Highly leveraged, so this return... Or if this is not necessarily highly leveraged, but the debt is boosting that return on equity as well. Okay. So this is mediocre performance. And that's going to be reflected in this chart here. There's the profit 10 years ago for Amcor. There's the profit last year for Amcor. There's the amount of equity we put in the business 10 years ago and the equity we've put in since. There's the money we borrowed 10 years ago and here's what we've borrowed since. And there's our return on equity. Now that's not such a great picture. And that's going to be reflected in the share price over long periods of time. Remember what Benjamin Graham said. Over the long run, the market is a weighing machine. And if you look at the performance of Amcor over the last 1993, or 1991 is over the far left-hand side, 1992, 93, that first vertical line that you can see, there hasn't been much change. There hasn't been much improvement in the performance of the shares. The shares haven't gone up that much on an aggregate basis. Have a look then at a different business. This is Forge. We tip in a bit of equity, not much at all, sorry, negative equity there. We earn $2 million of profit. Fast forward 10 years, we've now earned $30 million of profit. We've tipped in $90 million of equity. Now, you might first think, well, that's not such a great result. But look at the return that additional money is generating. We're generating a 30% return on the additional capital we're putting in this business. Every dollar we've committed to this business between 2006 and 2010 has generated a 30% return on our money. Can you think of somewhere better that we should have put the money? That's a pretty good return. We actually want this business not to pay a dividend, but to keep the money. This is the sign of a good quality company. Showing you the chart again, 2006 profit, 2010 profit, 2006 equity, 2010 equity. Well, we had made some contributions. Now, what's interesting about this is that equity isn't because we've tipped more money in, but because we've left money in, retained profits. Okay, so it's still our money. We've left it in there. It's retained profits rather than contributed capital. And debt, there's the money we borrowed previously. There's a little bit more debt now. But look at the improvement in the return on equity over that time. And that will be reflected in the share price as well. So over long periods of time, there is indeed a relationship between price and the performance of the company. Okay. Finally, which of these two businesses would you prefer to own? A business operated, arguably, by someone who's made all his money and doesn't feel, you know, doesn't have the energy to revitalise the stores and grow the stores, or isn't doing the things necessary to revitalise the retail concept. Should we buy a business like that? And that non-revitalisation and that maturity of the business in Australia has been reflected in the share price. Or should we buy shares in a business where, here's a photo of one of the workers, they work so hard that they're working themselves to the bone, they haven't got time to eat, and they're generating phenomenal returns on equity of about 80%. And that's being reflected over time in the share price as well. Think about which businesses you want to own. You want good quality businesses. You need to talk to your advisor and think about those junk businesses in your portfolio and get rid of them. Yeah, 10 seconds. 10 minutes. I'm done. I've got a minute to go according to my clock, so we can take questions. Yep. Okay, so here are some names for you to go out and research. These are businesses that I think are really good quality companies. Earlier in the presentation, you might recall I gave you a list of A1s and A2s and so on. Well, here's some businesses that I think are very high quality companies. So you can write those down and go and research them. If you buy a portfolio of businesses that are very good quality and you buy them at a good price, then your portfolio can do this. And I'll put those back up for you. Whoops. No, done it again. Apologies. Okay. So in case you missed those names, Vocus Communications, Woolworths, Reece, Cochlear, Platinum Asset Management and Matrix Composites and Engineering. Now, I own some of those companies, so please don't rush out and buy them because you'll only be helping me. But your portfolio can do very well if you buy good quality businesses and get rid of the junk. Alternatively, you could buy businesses that I think aren't as good quality. And if you buy businesses that aren't as good quality, then the reality is your portfolio could have a very different experience. This is a very impressive photo of a volcanic eruption. Okay. And the proof's in the pudding. I write for Alan Kohler. In fact, I met with Alan's team just before the presentation this morning. And this is a portfolio we've been running in Alan Kohler's newsletter there in the Eureka Report. And you can see the performance in 2010 exceeded the All Ordinaries Index substantially. And I haven't updated this since that's April 19. And again, it's been outperforming for this financial year up until April. I'd have to update that now for the recent negative performance in the stock market. But the proof is certainly in the pudding over time. Stick to great quality businesses. Own them while they're cheap and not too expensive. Get rid of the junk. We've gone through four or five, actually. We threw in a free one, you know, rules for selling. Think about those rules and apply them with discipline, and over time I think you should be able to outperform the market. Why do I say that? Because the index that we're all trying to beat has a lot of junk in it. If we can just remove the junk, over time we should do a lot better. Thanks very much for your time today. I'll sign some books for you outside. See you outside. Thanks.